This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Persistent high unemployment and lackluster job growth are having a profoundly damaging impact on millions in America. The jobs report announced on the month of August documented 54,000 jobs lost and the unemployment rate increasing to 9.6%. The ranks of the unemployed are continuing to swell, and those who have given up looking for work and who have been kept out of the workforce or involuntarily working part-time is estimated as being 16.7%.
These adverse effects are not limited to the unlucky ones who have lost their jobs. They're also creating shockwaves among those who are still employed, affecting wages and benefits, and they're devastating for those who are looking for work. For a discussion on the economy, wealth, and poverty and jobs, we're joined by Avis Jones DeWeaver, the Executive Director of the National Council of Negro Women, Catherine Singley, Policy Analyst with the Economic Employment Project of the National Council of La Raza, and Heidi Scherholz, Labor Market Economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Avis, we're used to the figure of 9.6%. Which is the official unemployment rate, and then, of course, the 16 is the underemployed rate. But for different parts of the population, and especially for African Americans, Latinos, and in different states even, it's much higher. So do you want to talk about that?
Certainly. The unemployment rate for people of color is extremely expanded beyond what we see in terms of the nation as a whole. When we see a 9.6% unemployment rate for the general population, you can expect to see 16% and more in communities of color, and especially in certain urban areas where that unemployment rate could reach much, much higher than that. And then when you look at specific age categories, it gets even worse. So, for example, African Americans 16 to 24 years of age, you're at about a quarter of the population is unemployed. So it's really, really distressing. Some recent research by the Urban Institute, in fact, have found that when you look at that very young cohort of individuals, black youngsters, particularly those who are high school dropouts, have especially a hard time getting into the world of work. And in fact, it takes them much longer to gain a job than a white counterpart with the same level of education, for example, a white high school dropout. And so even when you have individuals who have receive, you know, the same level of education, and there does seem to be some differences there with regards to one's ability to get into the workforce at every level, even at the youngest level, the least experienced, and even the older levels. And obviously there are also differences across gender as well.
And Heidi Scherholz, thank you for joining us as well. One of the things I'm also interested in is how the issue of race, which to some extent Avis has been speaking about, come into play when we're looking at the reality of the unemployment figures.
One of the things that's important to keep in mind when you're looking at an overall unemployment rate of 9.6% is that it just masks enormous variation amongst different subgroups in the population. So as Avis was talking about, we just see racial and ethnic minorities getting hit really hard, really disproportionately hard by this recession. That's actually been true in all recessions that we've seen, and in this one, because the overall situation is such a crisis, racial and ethnic minorities are getting hit that much harder. We're just, these crisis-level unemployment rates that we're seeing at the national level are really depression-era unemployment rates in certain communities in this country.
And we've also got people dropping off the unemployment benefits line. There are 1.6 million, I believe, people who have recently, they're now no longer receiving unemployment benefits because they've got more than 99 weeks that they've been on, so they're no longer receiving benefits. How does all of this, both the unemployment benefits the people are on, people being discouraged looking for work, people dropping off the unemployment rolls, how is poverty in this country being affected?
This is Heidi. So one thing that's interesting is we're going to get the 2009 income and poverty data out in a couple of weeks, so we'll have much more specific information on what's going on with poverty right now. But what we know is that the deterioration of the labor market in this recession has been, for example, the rise in the unemployment rate from 2008 to 2009 is by far the biggest rise we've seen on record. And so the year-over-year increases in poverty are going to be the worst we've ever seen. When you see families experiencing job loss, experiencing cuts in hours of work, experiencing wage cuts and lack of wage growth, that just means that the families that are at the lower end of the income distribution can drop off the bottom and dip down under the poverty line. And I think once we get the new numbers out, we are going to set every record there that we've seen as far as the worst one-year deterioration in the poverty rate.
And what is the poverty rate right now, and what is it likely to go up to?
So this is the weird thing. These poverty numbers are actually lagged. They don't come out right away. So the most recent numbers that we have at the national level for poverty rate is 2008. I think it's right now that the 2008 poverty rate was at 13.2%. I expect that poverty rate could go up to 15% or over. And then, again, you have the situation when that's the overall poverty rate. When you look at more disadvantaged groups, that skyrockets. So, for example, the poverty rate for kids, I believe, will probably be around 25%. Kids are in younger families. Younger families are more likely to fall into poverty, and so kids have higher poverty rates than the overall one. I believe that right now we are probably looking at one in every four kids living in poverty. And this is by the official poverty rate, which we all know is a pretty low bar. You know, it was the official poverty rate was determined 50 years ago, and it's only ever increased with inflation. But a lot has changed in this country since then, and it doesn't really capture a real cutoff for material deprivation. But nevertheless, it's likely that right now we have one in four kids living below the official poverty line.
Avis, one of the things that Ken and I were debating, and I wonder if you know the answer to this, is the whole question of when we talk about underemployed, does that also encompass those people who have been left, who are no longer even looking for jobs? Are we really talking about a number much higher than 16.7% just to get the magnitude of what's out there?
Well, I think it's a fair assumption to say that there are individuals who are working in jobs now in which they really greatly exceed the qualifications for that job. But in order to gain some employment, they have, in fact, taken what is available to them. And so if you want to say that the underemployed might be considered perhaps to expand that realm that you're discussing in terms of those who are discouraged, maybe you could bump that number up.
And how does this affect those who are employed in terms of the real wages that they're getting, and especially also those people who are picking up new jobs who were unemployed? What kind of wages are they getting? How are we growing the economy? How are we growing the workforce in the future in terms of what workers will be getting for their work?
When jobs really do start coming back, when things start to grow, that's the next question of what kind of jobs are going to come back. What are the wages going to be like? What are the benefits going to be like? Are people going to be able to get quality jobs? And I think the answer is it's going to be a very long time. So when the unemployment rate is persistent and high, like it's been for the last 2.5 years, and will likely be for probably another 3 or 4 years, when the labor market is so weak, employers actually don't have to pay big increases to get and keep the workers that they need. So wage growth stalls out. Workers just don't see rising wages, and that's what we're seeing now. We've just seen a real collapse of wage growth over the last 2 years. And with unemployment expected to be high for the next several years, I just don't see anything out there that will put upward pressure on wages.
Avis, and in terms of that, how does that affect, if wages are all going down, if people are unemployed to such an extent, how does that affect the overall economy? Where is the demand to get us out of this recession?
The sad thing is recalibrate to a new normal. There will be, as Heidi was pointing out, more basically depressed wages in this nation. And as a result, we will have less money that will be put back into the economy. And the economy really is not going to, I would imagine, come back at a robust level for several years now. This is not the type of recovery that is going to happen swiftly. It's going to happen slowly. It's going to happen painfully. And it's going to take some time for us to dig ourselves out of this hole.
And we're being joined by Catherine Singley from the National Council of La Raza. Catherine, in terms of the Latino and Latino populations of the country, how is this economy working? How much worse is it for those groups than for the rest of the population?
NCLR, the National Council of La Raza, has been tracking the recession, since the beginning, since 07. And since that time, unemployment has been higher for Latinos and African Americans than for the nation overall. Just this past month, we received confirmation that that's still the case. Latino unemployment is about 12% compared to 9.5% nationwide. Is industry focused? It has to do with industries, geography, and also skills and training of those workers.
And Catherine, also with regard to the undocumented population, the immigrant population, how is this recession affecting them?
It's tough to track with the undocumented population, but definitely among immigrants who are heavily represented in industries like construction and transportation that took some big hits throughout the recession, especially because of the housing market bust. We know that foreign-born workers and foreign-born Latino workers have been dealt kind of a double blow. And many of those jobs were not family-sustaining jobs in the first place. They paid low wages. The fatality rate, especially for some of the construction jobs, are higher than average and higher than the rest of the nation, as many people know.
And now that I'm in a state of complete morbidity.
They call it the dismal silence.
Sorry to be so depressing.
Well, no, but we need to assess and we need to understand. And we haven't even, built in a lot of ways the issue of youth unemployment and so on. But so why don't we elevate our positions all respectively, or at least think that it's an elevation, and make ourselves in a much more strategic position to the Obama administration? And the question becomes, really, what is to be done? Why don't we begin with Avis? What do we really need to do? Is it about transaction taxes, pumping more money into the economy in order to come up with a much broader stimulus? Is the stimulus that was announced by President Obama of $30 billion the first year and $20 billion the second year, is that the issue? What needs to be done? Let's start with our sister Avis Jones-DeWeaver.
I think there are a couple of different ways in which we need to go simultaneously. Number one, we need to put people back to work. And I would love to see FDR-like broad programmatic strategies to get people working again. I understand that the president is announcing a plan to reshore up our infrastructure the same way in which he was discussing over the course of his campaign. Now he's talking about actually implementing some of that work in terms of roadways, railways, bridges, everything that needs to be reworked in this nation in a much, much broader way than was originally planned under the first stimulus. That is some work that we definitely need to do. We need to grow in the area of the green economy. That is the economy of the future. I believe that it has the potential of being the next dot-com-like expansion in terms of our economy. And best of all, those are jobs just like infrastructure jobs that can't be outsourced to other nations. Thirdly, I think that we need to really look at those individuals who have still been left behind and what can we do for those individuals today, right now. When I look at the tattered level of our safety net as a nation, I'm very distraught because if you take a look at what's going on with TANF right now, welfare reform, this is if there ever was a time in which one might expect welfare rolls to go up, a time of protracted unemployment, high unemployment, all across this nation, frankly, this would be it. But we're not seeing that. In fact, in some areas, we're seeing the welfare rolls continue to drop. And so that tells me that there are a lot of individuals out there who need help, and they're not getting the help that they need. And by the way, we still are under the five-year lifetime limit in terms of cash assistance that was put in place under welfare reform. You know, so at the same time that we're thinking about developing broad, programmatic, job-based strategies to get America back to work again, which I think we need to do, I also think we need to think about those individuals who are struggling today and need help right now just to make the basics, their basic ends meet. That's the part of this puzzle that unfortunately seems to continue to be pushed across, you know, just ignored and totally not addressed in any sort of significant manner.
And Catherine Singley from La Raza.
There's a million ways it could work, right? But the priority for getting Americans back to work is one that everyone can agree with. It's about how to do it and the political will to do it that we're really lacking right now. And actually, National Council La Raza, along with many other organizations and everyday people, are actually joining together in a campaign to really move the dial and convince our leaders that there needs to be action on getting people back to work, on ending the foreclosure epidemic, and really investing in the country. So if any of the listeners are interested in joining the campaign, it's called One Nation Working Together. And it's really a moment of unity. It cuts across race lines, ethnicity, income level, geography. And our plan is to gather in Washington, D.C. on October 2nd for a rally, really to call attention to where our nation is and how far we are from reaching that American dream, and to really reorient our priorities toward getting our nation and our economy on the right track again.
And Heidi Scherholz, I have to say that what Catherine was talking about is a mass demonstration, and we want the numbers to come out. But I wasn't clear what really is. We want the message to be jobs, but the question is, how are those jobs created? What needs to be done? What is the specific message to generate that reality?
So that's a very good question. And the messaging, that's a tricky one, but I can tell you the economics behind this. So what we know is that the original stimulus that was passed a year and a half ago was very successful in that it did exactly what we expected it to do, that it's going to create or save between 3 and 4 million jobs. That's what it has been doing. Right now, it hasn't all been spent out yet, but right now the estimates are that we would have lost 3 million more jobs if we hadn't passed that stimulus. It stopped the hemorrhaging. It did what we expected it to do, but it just wasn't big enough to really turn this around. And that's what we need. We need more of that kind of work. The spending that was in that, where we had expansion of safety net, which is actually a really good jobs creator. You get money into the hands of somebody who's been unemployed for 6 months, they're going to have no choice but to spend it in their economy. And that's stimulus. Infrastructure spending, like what Obama talked about, fiscal relief to states, that goes a long distance in terms of keeping states who have really crunched budgets from having to lay off teachers and firefighters. And then what one of the other speakers talked about is if we could really start thinking seriously this time about doing some direct government hiring of workers, doing some direct job creation, get money in the hands of mayors who can put people to work in projects that are needed in their communities. It's really time that we start thinking in those bold ways, too.
We're talking about being bold, but we haven't talked about the magnitude. How big a stimulus do we need? Should it be at least as big as the one last year?
That's the order what we should be talking about. So the math. We got that stimulus was around $800 billion, and that saving created or saved between 3 and 4 million jobs. So that's the context that we're in. And let me talk about the scope of the problem. We are now down roughly 11 million jobs in this country. So we've lost, right now we're down as far as just the actual count of jobs. We're down 7.6 million jobs from where we were before the recession started. But over the course of those, you know, 2.5 years since the recession started, the population has continued to grow. We actually have to add around 100,000 every month just to tread water, just to keep up with population growth. So we should have added over 3 million jobs. When you put together what we've lost, what we should have added, the gap in the labor market right now is on the order of 11 million jobs. So when you look at it in those terms, doing something on the scale of what we did, the Original Recovery Act, is very, very much in order.
Well, we're going to tell this to the Obama administration on 10-2-10. We're absolutely right. We're going to Washington, as our sister has said, from the National Council of La Raza. But we got a lot of work to do, and we have some great suggestions here from Avis Jones-DeWeaver, Heidi Sherholtz, and Catherine Singley. And they are respectively from the executive director of the National Council of Negro Women, and Catherine is the policy analyst with the Economic Employment Project of the National Council of La Raza, and Heidi Sherholtz is labor market economist with the Economic Policy Institute. And, maybe you could replace, Geithner, maybe, or, to be seen.
A lot of people to be replaced there.
But we're going to tell it to the president on October 2nd, and I thank all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
And now, heeding a call to put New Yorkers back to work, hundreds rallied at Federal Hall in Lower Manhattan to build for the October 2nd One Nation Working Together Washington demonstration to demand that city, state, and federal government representatives make getting people back to work their number one priority. Let's go to the rally and hear what members of the United Workers Action Group, an organization of 99ers who have exhausted their 99-week limit on unemployment benefits, had to say.
Just to get a job. One Nation getting a job, and we are on the move. One Nation getting a job. Going to Washington just to get a job.
I'm at Federal Hall after the rally, and I'm with a number of 99ers. And let's hear what they have to say about what happened in their lives and what needs to be done. First, Chris Williams.
I'm Chris Williams. I'm 52 years old. I've been unemployed since March of 2008. I was let go from two jobs, a full-time job with a major investment banking firm that went under, and also downsized from a law firm. I've collected my 99 weeks, and I have been without any safety net to take care of my personal businesses, to pay my bills, buy food. I've been forced into almost eviction with an eviction notice. Luckily, I've gotten some help with that, but I still have no income coming in. And it's pretty rough out here for 99ers to survive. We're only asking, not for a handout, but to at least acknowledge us and figure out some sort of way where we can earn our income and retain our dignity again. And we're coming down to Washington on 10-2 in order for us to have a better visible signal for America, because the 99ers are the least acknowledged within the media. We are just shoved under the table, under the rug, without any recognition whatsoever. So we need to shine a light on our situation and our plight.
My name is Brendan Spillane. I've been unemployed since May 2008. To make a long, ugly story short, I was forced out of my position. And I've been getting the 99 myself. I had to fight for my benefits. It took me 4 months to get them in the first place. And now they've run out. And I have no safety net. I'm lucky I have a supportive family in that regard. But I'm getting antsy and very impatient because I haven't had a job since then. I've been looking all over. I'm going to places. I've been sending out resumes online. You name it, I've done it. What needs to be done is for the government to recognize us, that we're human beings too. We're not casualties, we're human beings. We should be given the extended Tier 5 of benefits for the unemployed. The government has to stop spending money on a war we're not winning and just be more concerned with us on the home front, because there are too many people, too many good people, like myself, out of work, and we're itching to be back in the workplace.
My name is Yvonne Fitzner. I'm 67 years old. I've been unemployed, for more than 2 years. I lost my job in a rather interesting situation. I was a personal assistant in the office of a child psychiatrist, and his wife was about to lose her job, so he decided to give her mine. I also lost a part-time job that I had for 14 and a half years. So my benefits ran out the end of March. I have depleted my savings. I am surviving. I've cut back on, I sold my television set. I sold family jewelry. I cut the cable TV service. I now have just plain local calls on my telephone, and I've been looking for a job, well, for more than 2 years. I rarely get called in for an interview. I rarely get my resumes responded to. I've tried everything from, I've also spent 17 years doing volunteer work for my high school alumni association, where I've done fundraising and procured gifts and dealt with some of our celebrity alumni. So I thought that experience would help me get a job too. I've tried for everything from public relations positions, communications positions, receptionist. I even asked for a job in a juice bar where there was a help wanted sign posted. And the manager said, I'm sorry, but a lot of college grads have already given me their phone numbers. So I still gave him mine and said, if you know something doesn't work out, call me. And of course they haven't. We really need an extension. We're not looking for a handout, but there aren't enough jobs out there. I know that there are approximately 2.9 million jobs available for 15 million people. That's definitely not enough. And if the government can't create more jobs quickly enough, they do have to offer more extensions. There are many people behind us who are going to become 99ers very soon. I really do believe we are in a depression, and they are not telling us that because they don't want us to panic. If something doesn't happen soon, I would say by November, I will be homeless. I have no living family members to move in with.
We want people to come to Washington on October 2nd. It's a massive rally where we will support jobs and ask for jobs. This country needs jobs, and this country needs to get back to work. The 99ers District, our web address is uwag.org.
Uwag.org?
Uwag.org.
I love it. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.